Good Monday morning, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here on the show. Coming up on the big show, creator of the vaccine says that get used to this for at least another year, because guess what? We won't be able to get a handle on this until next winter. All the more reason for us to pass a stimulus sooner rather than later. That's the House of Representatives' job. They are back today in Washington, finally. So all eyes on the House of Representatives. Will we get a substantive stimulus package done? Joe Biden is demanding it. President Trump is tweeting about it from the golf course. Can they come together and pass meaningful stimulus? The deadline is upon us. Also on the show today, should America put in place universal basic income? We have some testing that's been done out in California on this very topic. We will look at that and more on the show today. So glad to have you on the show. Grover is here, passed out. My trusty sidekick. He says, welcome to the show. Hopes you had a wonderful weekend. I want to tell you about our show sponsor today, our friends over at Birch Gold. You know, so many people ask, like, how can I invest in gold right now? What's the best way for me to get precious metals? This is the best way. To get your free gold kit right now, no obligation, just go to morninginvest.com/gold. Morninginvest.com/gold. You can safeguard your IRA or your 401k. They are coming for that 401k, and companies left and right are getting rid of that company matching program for their 401k. Wells Fargo just announced they're doing that. So now is a great time to start investing in gold. If you go to Birch Gold, you'll learn how you can protect your retirement. So just go to morninginvest.com/gold to learn more and get your free gold kit to start buying precious metals today. I want to start this show with COVID-19, and it was a brutal, brutal weekend. I'm sure if you've read any of the headlines, you know how bad it's getting. But I think it's more important than ever to be hearing from the people that are on the front lines. I've been hearing from a lot of you that are frontline workers, essential workers. They're working in hospitals. Two of our viewers are doctors, a husband and wife team who watched this show and wrote to me and said, you know, we're both just switching shifts right now, and we're just so tired. We're just so tired. We've been exhausted. We've been going nonstop since the spring. And that's one of the big issues sitting in right now, is this fatigue among doctors. Many doctors right now, according to reports this morning, are calling it quits. They're saying, I'm done. I can't handle it anymore. And they're quitting. And can you blame them at this point? With little help from the federal government, hospital beds that are overflowing, they have people that are literally in the hallways because they can't get into hospital beds, bleeding out in hallways. That's what's happening across this country. This weekend, of course, we even covered it in the newsletter this morning. You have inmates in El Paso, Texas. Yes, prison inmates are being used now to carry bodies. Hey, instead of making license plates in the prisons, let's get the inmates to carry dead bodies. COVID patients. The U.S. has reported more than 1 million new infections in the past week, including more than 133,000 on Sunday, just yesterday, 133,000. Now we have a total over 11 million. What's amazing is my wife and I, we were working on the newsletter this morning and going over the numbers. And she said, you know, here's the latest number. I want to make sure that it's tied to your number that you're putting in for the update. Like, I want to make sure the numbers are accurate. So we both looked at the different websites that are pulling this data, and because within a few hours, that number shifts. Like, so we want to make sure we had an accurate data number when we're publishing the newsletter. Over 11 million. It changes that quickly. Just to give you some perspective, is that we hit 10 million cases last week. So in 6 days, we've already hit another million. Just wrap your head around that for a second and take a look at the latest numbers here. This is the state-by-state breakdown and the deaths and reported cases. You remember just a few months ago, this was mostly kind of neutral. Dark brown means you're in a lot of trouble. With record hospitalizations, 69,000 as of Sunday. COVID-19 is now widespread in the U.S., and the states have begun to impose these new restrictions on people's movements. On Sunday, we had Washington, Michigan announced new restrictions, Oregon, New Mexico. They're going to including a halt to indoor dining, limits to indoor social gatherings. But of course, the problem is that other states are resisting. So how can you possibly get a handle on this if you have Oregon and New Mexico are ordering lockdowns for 2 weeks? And then right next door in Texas, no. Or right next door in Arizona, no. How does that work? The 133,000 new cases that we have are reported on Sunday, according to the data compiled by Johns Hopkins University, bring the U.S. total to nearly 11.4 million, including new 1 million reported in the last week alone. Just to give you some perspective, it took more than 3 months for the U.S. to reach 1 million cases after that first outbreak was reported back in January. It took months. Now we're doing it in a week. Sunday's figure was lower than in recent days, but it was also higher than the 109,000 that was reported a week earlier. So week over week, we're just keep blowing these records out of the water. And these states that wanted to profess that they were handling this great, like North Dakota, South Dakota, shattering records now. These were the Trump-supporting governors that said, we don't need a lockdown. It's up to you if you want to wear a mask. Freedom. Somewhere Mel Gibson in Braveheart is shouting freedom as people are dying left and right. Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of the UK, back in self-isolation this morning after another round of COVID contact. Remember, he got COVID, just like Trump. He was in the ICU. So he is now self-isolating again. There are predictions that deaths in the United States could double over the winter, according to the latest data out this morning. Michigan has had its worst week ever. Washington imposing these sweeping new restrictions. Quarantine is setting in. This fatigue right now is setting in Texas, as people are just getting sick of quarantining. So what's the alternative? Again, this is why, because we've never had a full nationwide lockdown that nipped this in the bud and got this under control. Remember, to try to get this under control is an effort to try to give doctors some relief, to hospital beds some open seats, some open beds, so that if people need ventilators, there's that space for it. Professor Yugur Sahin, who's the BioNTech co-founder, now he's the guy who is one of the guys that came up with the vaccine. The one, of course, with Pfizer, that is now over 90% effective. He's warning us. Listen to him warning us right now that this is not going to be ready. We're going to have to deal with this for another year. This is an interview that he just did with the BBC. We're not going to get a handle us until next year. Listen.
This winter will be hard. Yeah, so we will not have a big impact on the infection numbers with our vaccine in this winter. If everything continues to go well, we will start to deliver the vaccine end of this year, beginning next year. Our goal is to deliver more than 300 millions of vaccine doses until April next year, which could allow us to already start to make an impact. The bigger impact will happen until summer. Yeah, the summer will help us anyway, because the infection rate will go down in summer. And what is absolutely essential is that we get a high vaccination rate before autumn, winter next year.
So basically, this year is a wash. We knew that. President Trump had been promising a vaccine that would be mobilized immediately. That's not going to happen. And all due credit to the Trump administration for this Operation Warp Speed, the fact that Pfizer, Moderna, news overnight about Moderna, their trials and their early vaccine trials have a 95% effective rate. So you have Pfizer, Moderna, Operation Warp Speed, trying to get these vaccines out to as many people as possible and working hard to make it happen. Good. Yes. Fast. We've never seen a vaccine development this fast in human history. So good on them for that. And they should be applauded for that. But we have a long way to go. And we're not putting in place proper precautions to protect people now. There is no vaccine. So hearing from him that we're going to have to deal with this through the year, and then we won't have anything meaningful to hang our hats on until winter next year. That's straight from the horse's mouth. So stop believing like fake news that we're going to all get a vaccine in the next few weeks and everyone's going to be fine. We don't even know, by the way, if it's going to stop transmission from people to people. They estimate it could stop transmission by up to 50%, but we don't know. Meanwhile, these numbers continue off the charts. These are the daily confirmed cases remain high. Look at this 7-day average, just boom. It's a cliff. And then, of course, it seems like President Trump, his priority right now is spending time on the golf course, which is what he did this weekend. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, if I'm a president of the United States during a pandemic where people are dying left and right, where states are being overrun, inmates are having to be used to carry out bodies, I don't go golfing. That's just me. I would be holding daily briefings, making, you know, meeting with the coronavirus task force, which is all but dissolved at this point. Dr. Fauci has said it's nearly impossible to work with his administration.
Didn't Donald Trump like really hardcore go after Obama for golfing?
Oh, yeah. He repeatedly tweeted about how President Obama would go golfing all the time. It was like the common joke. This president has golfed more than any president, I think, in American history. I don't know if it equals what Reagan did or not. I'm not sure, but he's out there all the time. And by the way, you know, so this is a big focus right now, him golfing. And we've learning this morning, another main priority of the White House is to finish this border wall. Okay, so let's marshal all of our forces right now. Remember, Jared Kushner was in charge of making sure that this border wall got off the ground, right? He was in charge of buying up the land, trying to get this, you know, getting contracts and everything to try to push this border wall through. So this is a main priority for the Trump administration right now. What about COVID? How about that? So instead, here's the reporting this morning. Because Joe Biden has said there will not be another foot of wall constructed on my administration, the president-elect has said. So instead of abandoning the project, contractors now are rushing to finish what they can before they're shut down. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf said that the goal is to complete 450 more miles of the wall by the end of the year. The government has $15 billion set aside for this project, which, as NPR points out, is more than the cost of a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Legal challenges to the wall are still coming, of course, despite an uncertain future. There's a bird habitat in Texas that was taken over by the government for the wall, and environmentalists freaked out because all these birders, like, you do not touch. So they freaked out. Now that's being, they've kept bulldozers away. Good. A Catholic orphanage is also along the wall's path, and they want to take that down and destroy an orphanage. Isn't that like a perfect metaphor for this administration? We're going to take down an orphanage so we can build a wall. By the way, who wants to come here right now? Who wants to come to America right now with these types of numbers? Do you want to go to the United States, the worst in the world for coronavirus right now? You've built your own wall. You've built your own virus wall. Do you need an actual physical wall, by the way? So this is the focus right now. This and President Trump tweeting. That's what his focus is. He was out tweeting all weekend again that he won the election, despite no evidence to support that. We have no stimulus in place. We have no nationwide mask mandate. We have no nationwide stay-at-home order. Meanwhile, we are hearing again this weekend from Team Biden and what they hope to accomplish for battling the virus, which is to keep people home and pay them to stay home. So this is, of course, incredibly important for us to get this done. Ron Klain, who is the incoming chief of staff for Vice President Biden, is calling on Congress, number one, to get a stimulus passed. So the House of Representatives returns today back in Washington to try to get things done today, to put meaningful stimulus on the table. Mitch McConnell has said that he'd like to get a stimulus package passed before the end of the year, but he's been citing new economic numbers, the job loss numbers or job numbers around 6.9% unemployment. He says that's positive news. Of course, that's a fantasy number, given the fact that it doesn't account for the tens of millions who have permanent job loss or who are just given up. They can't find work and they've just given up. Their company has closed down completely. But he's happy with that 6.9% number. Ron Klain, the White House chief, president-elect's chief of staff choice, has worked across the aisle before. He's saying we need to pass stimulus now. We can't wait 2 months. This is not one of those things that we can wait for the next 2 months. We need to pass it now. And if President-elect Biden, when he becomes president, gets in there and this is not done, and he will have to pass his own large stimulus. But we need to get something done now. Here he is on Meet the Press just yesterday asking, answering these questions by Chuck Todd.
How urgently do you think House Democrats, Senate Republicans, they're loggerheads? Do you take what you can get now, or do you support Speaker Pelosi holding out?
Well, the president-elect had a conversation with Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer on Friday, and they talked about the need to get urgent action. I mean, we need action during the lame duck. There's a lot of things that are going to have to wait until Joe Biden is president, but this is not one of them. Getting help to people, getting help to state and local governments. I mean, we need urgent help to individuals, but we're going to see layoffs of police, of firefighters, of teachers in the next month in a lot of states and localities unless these local governments get the aid they need. I know that Speaker Pelosi is committed to that. I know Leader Schumer's committed to that. This shouldn't be partisan. By the way, these layoffs are coming not just in so-called blue states, but red states also. This is a national crisis. It needs bipartisan national action now.
So will we see it? That's the big question. So the House of Representatives returns today. On the table is this $2.2 trillion piece from Nancy Pelosi and Democrats. She is being urged by Ro Khanna and other members of the Democratic Party to accept the Steven Mnuchin plan of $1.8 trillion. Just take it, take it, take it. Mitch McConnell, for his mind, wants to pass $650 billion is the max that looks like he's going to. I'm surprised there's not more derision aimed at Mitch McConnell in all of this. I mean, at the end of the day, Mitch McConnell is the reason that we don't have a stimulus package. Mitch McConnell is the one that instructed the White House before the election to not do a deal with Nancy Pelosi. That came straight out of his caucus. Not to do a deal with Nancy Pelosi until after the election. Great. So now you won. All of your big money donors are happy. Now, should we care about the American people? Should we put in place any kind of stimulus that's going to help the American people? Doesn't seem to be a priority. And President Trump is out to lunch, playing golf and tweeting, showing little leadership on this issue. He's shown very little leadership on this issue all summer. Do we expect him now that he lost the election to show any leadership on this? No, I don't. Where is there hope for a stimulus check? It's in this continuing resolution, the CR, that needs to be passed to keep the government running by December 11th. So that has to be a focus of Congress right now, is keeping the government running for all of these essential workers in the federal government. This is not a time for a government shutdown. You know, frankly, maybe it is in some ways, right? I mean, I think we're like sitting in the middle of a failed state to begin with. As you look around and you see what this country has become, I mean, it's like collapsing right before our eyes. I just cannot wrap my head around, you have Congress just sitting there doing nothing. As people are losing their homes, bodies are piling up at hospitals, people are losing their jobs, losing their health care, and yet it's okay for us to continue to fund massive, massive military projects. That's exactly where our money is going, to these massive military projects.
Well, I think the only way you're ever going to get them to do anything is if they lost the same things we did. If they lost their health care, if they lost their weight. I mean, that's the only way they're ever going to listen, because while we're suffering, they're still getting rich.
Yeah, but is that pain enough for these people? I mean, to me, the only way we're going to get change is, you know, they lose their health care. They've made millions, right? They've already made millions. They can go out and self-fund their own health care. They're fine. It's to throw these bums out. It's to have meaningful change in Congress. You know, and, you know, what's sad is that these same people are being dragged back into Washington. It's the same faces. It's the same corporate elites. It's the same people that I've been seeing for 20 years covering politics. You know, funny story. I remember when Al Gore loses, And then John Kerry ends up bringing the same advisors, the same people into his camp. It's those same people. They're always popping up. Let's bring James Carville back again. Let's bring these people who literally led to the losses for Al Gore and others. They've like lose state races. They keep losing and losing and losing. Let's keep paying them. All of these like Washington strategists who just live in that K Street world, downtown Washington, D.C., all those lobbying firms that love and run on this type of culture, they just keep making money while the American people get screwed. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you got rid of their health care, the same health care that, you know, a lot of members of progressive members of the Democratic Party have been pushing for the American people, like universal health care for all, the same level of health care that Congress gets, wouldn't that be great if the American people got that?
Well, I'm saying salary too. Like they should lose everything, all their benefits. Like, I mean, because nothing that they get is tied to what we get. Like they get completely different treatment than we do, and they are the people as well. So they should get no better treatment on anything than we do. And if you took their, you know, all you'd have to do is get rid of lobbyists. If you did that one thing, and if they actually had to help people rather than fill their pockets, most of them would probably leave anyway, because if they're like, well, this isn't making me a lot of money, I don't really care about these people. You'd get people in that did it for the right reasons.
Right. The selfless people.
Right.
Yeah, because it's just a money-making machine. So they're in there as a lobbying firm trying to make sure that you're going to continue to pay Boeing, continue to fund these big defense contracts, these big government contracts. That's why you're there. You're hoping that your pork project will get shoved inside of a larger bill that no one will notice. You've been there as a lobbying firm pushing for this bridge project that all of these people are going to make millions of dollars off of. And guess what? It's buried in some sort of a healthcare bill. Why is there a bridge project in a healthcare bill? Lobbying firms. Lobbyists, that's all it is. Making millions off of your backs. I mean, at some point, this is going to collapse, and I think we're on the verge of it. We're starting to see, I mean, major fissures right now in our society. If you're not paying attention, I don't know what kind of a walled garden you live in, but it's happening. So one way that we might see a stimulus check is in this continuing resolution, the CR, to keep the government open. Can Democrats cram in a $1,200 stimulus check inside of that resolution if there's no other stimulus that emerges over the next few days? I mean, I think you're going to see people just taken to the streets. If there's no stimulus, you know, you have people out protesting right now, did Trump win, did Trump lose, et cetera. Why don't we turn our attention and fury to the things that actually matter?
I was saying there
could actually see some change.
It'd be nice to see a purple revolution. Everybody go purple for like 2 years. No red, no blue. Unless you unite behind a common enemy, because that's what it is. It's a common enemy. I mean, they do not care. It doesn't matter what side, Republican, Democrat, they are not working for us.
But the thing is, they lied. You know, people are so brainwashed and they're lied to. You know, they watch all of these television ads. They tune out politics. They're not tuned in because they just think it doesn't serve them at all. You have over 100 million people that don't vote because they don't think that politics changes anything. So they're so tuned out. And then when they do tune in, it's a few weeks before the election. They feel like their patriotic duty. They have to go and vote. So they start watching these television ads and they're talking about some of the issues that they would care about. But at the end of the day, it's all fake because none of them actually carry out those positions that are in these television ads. It's all rhetoric. And they feed off of these culture wars when they're all bought and sold by these big corporations and big companies. I mean, that's the truth of it. So, you know, I'm fingers crossed that we'll see some sort of a stimulus package emerge over the next few days. I think everyone knows we can't continue this right now. My question, though, is, you know, where will President Trump come down on this? He's shown little interest right now with doing anything. He just wants to golf and tweet, really. Holding press conferences where he can talk about how he wins, how he's a winner. President Trump, for his efforts right now. What's next for the Trump campaign? What's next for President Trump? Well, we're getting some more insight into that this morning. Because I've been saying that the next chapter for President Trump is going to be Trump television. Well, now the reporting is growing fast and furiously. And Trump allies explored a buyout of Newsmax Television as a Fox News alternative. So the group Hicks Equity Partners, a firm which has ties to the co-chair of the Republican National Committee, is pitching investors right now on a new conservative news channel. And for about 2 years, they've been trying to do this. And they've been, I think, maybe knowing that they wanted to take on Fox News, but that if they were going to lose this election, what would be next for President Trump with his 90 million followers? With one tweet, sign up for my new television network. Boom, an explosion of revenue and subscribers. So the Hicks Equity Partners, which is, again, tied to the RNC, has held talks, according to the Wall Street Journal, in recent months about acquiring and investing in Newsmax, according to people familiar with the matter. Part of a larger effort that could also include a streaming video service. Newsmax's viewership has exploded since Election Day, with so many people furious at Fox News. These were people who, of course, were frustrated that Fox News called Arizona before any other news organization did, except the Associated Press. It turned out to be true, and then every other network called Arizona for Biden a few days later. But nevertheless, they were the first, and people were saying, you know, Fox News, screw Fox News, they're horrible, etc. And Newsmax hosts have promoted Trump's claims that the election was stolen. Of course, there's no evidence of significant fraud has been presented to any courts or anything. It's unclear, according to Wall Street Journal, whether Hicks Equity talks with Newsmax will move forward. The discussions show the belief among some investors and allies of Mr. Trump that there is room to mount a real challenge to Fox News, which has dominated conservative media for two decades. They've, in fact, tried to get Megyn Kelly, former Fox News host, to come over. She has said no. She wants to work on her own media company. But they have been wooing producers and other people to come over. So could this be the new Trump television network with ownership there by Trump? Or will he start his own thing? It's unclear, but if it's tied to the RNC, this could be an interesting position. This would help him. Right now, Trump and Fox News have a complicated relationship. The network's opinion hosts are really supportive, of course. You know, Sean Hannity loves him, etc. He devours Fox content all the time. He tweets about it. Yet he then, I think he loves Fox, but then I think he, like, you know, wants to drum up this other consternation about Fox. So then he tweets about them and says nasty things about them, all in an effort to like raise the ire of people so they might come over to his own media empire at some point. But we know that he watches it all day. Mr. Trump, of course, has criticized Fox on Twitter while promoting segments on Newsmax and the OAN network. So this is the focus of Trump's time right now. We also had reporting that Jared Kushner has been looking into setting up different discussions for his own television network, Trump's television network. So he's been putting his focus on that over the past few weeks. So this is all unfolding. What's not unfolding is a stimulus bill. What's not unfolding is a transition that's clean for President-elect Joe Biden. What's not emerging is any kind of real national strategy on COVID-19, which is really the thing that lost him this election. It's clear. You know, it's interesting. I'm almost finished reading Rage by Bob Woodward. And in it, he really deep dives into Brad Parscale, who was Trump's campaign manager. And Brad Parscale basically set up a war room, his own campaign office, overlooking the Potomac River, living the life. And he's like, I'm the first campaign manager in history to literally start on day one. So when Trump got inaugurated, he was like, we're starting right now, running for re-election. And about a year ago or so, maybe 9, 10, 11 months ago, he was asked by Bob Woodward, is there anything that you think could derail the president right now? Is there one thing, hidden dynamite behind a door that would derail the president and he would lose? And he said, yes, there's one thing, coronavirus. His own campaign manager acknowledged that this is the thing. Lindsey Graham said to him, if this is true, Senator Lindsey Graham, that the way that this virus is unfolding, if you don't take leadership of this, this would be the greatest stain on your presidency. And that's why he lost, because he didn't heed those warnings. It's clear. He thought it would just go away magically. It's going to be a miracle. It's just going to disappear, he said multiple times. Well, this is the reason. Now it's here, and it's stronger than ever. And we don't have a national plan in place. And you have random states choosing to go under lockdown, other states resisting, New Mexico ordering lockdowns, Oregon ordering lockdowns, other states saying, we're not going to do that. It would devastate our economy. We can't go. We just cannot go on like this. I mean, I don't know how we go on like this when you have one state declaring a lockdown and other states not. That's how other countries have managed to nip this in the bud, is by going under a full lockdown. No ifs, ands, or buts about it throughout Asia. We can't do that. We can't do that. Got more news to talk about coming up here on the show. I want to talk about what's unfolding in the Biden camp right now. But first, do we have any good questions we could take? Anybody weighing in with some good questions?
Most of the comments, we did have somebody that sent a super chat asking why they can't use the border wall funding to send to the people for the pandemic.
Great question. Do you know, the thing with the border wall money that Jared Kushner worked on is that they, and Jared Kushner admitted this, that they looked under every seat cushion in the federal government to get that funding, that $20 billion put in place for the border wall. They turned over every seat cushion, found as much loose change as they could. Imagine that there's just like billions of dollars in loose change hanging out in the federal government, and yet we can't get relief for the American people. We can bail out big businesses and corporations and Wall Street, because with, you know, this pocket change of billions of dollars hidden under the seat cushions, we can't get it out to the American people. Yeah, instead, let's race to put up a border wall. What a complete waste of money.
And Christina Ellis is asking, so I asked before, would a full lockdown mean martial law?
I don't think so. I don't think we saw that in other countries, full martial law. I mean, I guess it amounts to, you know, how much would we have the National Guard involved in making sure that people aren't gathering? How much would the police need to be involved? The problem is that we don't do proper tracing in this country. You know, I had a friend who traveled to Israel. He's from Israel, and he got to Tel Aviv, and he had to quarantine for 2 weeks, and they checked on him every day. The police literally would send him a text message. So they knew exactly where he was, by the way. And they weren't taking anything lightly. They had a text message. He had to look out his window and then wave down to the police on the street and confirm that he'd have to be on the phone talking to them and confirm that it was him. And they'd have to see that he was quarantined in his house. We're not doing that. Heck, I have a family member who just got COVID over the past few days. It's a big deal. I mean, he was totally out of it because of fever. Totally achy. And good thing he's in good shape. He's in his 60s, but, you know, exercises regularly. So he takes care of himself in that way. But, just knocked him out. He never gets fevers. Never. And all they did to like alert him was send him an email. And it took 3 days to get the test back. So in that amount of time, like he was trying to self-quarantine, stay as far away from people as he could. But that's how long it takes to get results in the United States. We can do that, though, for NFL teams. We can get this rapid testing. I'm sure at the White House, they have rapid testing. But the fact that he had to wait almost 4 days to find out the test results?
Yeah, Joe absurd. Rogan. Joe Rogan, on his podcast guest, they take a test and the results are available right then and there to come on his show.
Like right then and there? Oh, God. Well, I got to be out golfing, though. You know, this is leadership right here.
I don't wear a toupee.
So you're president. Well, Team Biden is starting to scare the hell out of me. Just as we're saying goodbye to one president, the team that's emerging now for the Joe Biden camp is starting to really scare me. You know, as Glenn Greenwald had written, there's three things we need to be worried about right now with the Biden presidency: wars, corporate elites, and censorship. So that's what we need to be worried about. I started going through the names, the different people who are now coming into the Biden cabinet, who are being selected for top positions, and I am incredibly troubled about it. So let's just go through a couple of these. I want to start in reverse order, though, because one of the ones that hasn't gotten much discussion is censorship. People have been talking about the war hawks and all, you know, the warmongers and so forth, the chicken hawks and others who are going to be a part of this Biden cabinet, in many ways sort of insulating him from any progressive ideas. That's what I guess at the end of the day, I'm most worried about that, is that you had progressives who were running and saying, we're going to throw our vote behind you, Joe Biden, but we want you to stand with us, you know, ending fracking, you know, helping the environment, you know, some sort of universal health care, maybe some sort of universal basic income, push for a national, a federal minimum wage increase, all of those things. Ending these foreign wars. Will you do it? Yeah, I'm gonna be right there with you. So now what happens is you surround yourself with sycophants, right? You insulate yourself like in a bubble so that you don't hear these outside progressive voices anymore. They just get shut off. It's like a dome. It's like that Stephen King book, The Dome, right? Just like, boom, right over top of you. And, you know, when you're White House chief of staff and you're in that Oval Office, like the only things that get to you are filtered. They're coming through a filter, like a Brita filter. And that Brita filter right now is troubling me. So let's start with censorship. Richard Stengel was the longest serving undersecretary of state for public diplomacy and public affairs in the U.S. history. And at the State Department, he was under Barack Obama. Stengel boasted that he not only started, he started the only entity in government, a non-classified entity that combated Russian disinformation. He was a big Russiagate promoter. He called it the Global Engagement Center, and it amounted to basically a massive vehicle for advancing U.S. propaganda around the world. He, in fact, called it an information war. He also worked at Time Magazine, by the way. So he's there like foisting propaganda while he was at Time Magazine. He wrote a book on this called Information Wars: How We Lost the Global Battle Against Disinformation and What We Can Do About It. He has also promoted rethinking the First Amendment. The reason the censorship issue is such a big deal right now, you've got Twitter, you know, censoring tweets from crazy people. You've got Facebook taking it upon themselves to curate news. You see this big push right now for all these conservatives to move over to this new Parler app because they're so sick and tired of Twitter and Facebook for censoring things. You know, my thing is like these companies, these big media companies that are run by these billionaires are basically telling you what you're allowed to hear. Like when the president tweets, "I won the election," let him tweet that. Why does there have to be a thing underneath it that says, this is a violation of Twitter's terms of service. We have found that this is not accurate. So they get to pick and choose. There's, you know, pick and choose what speech we get to listen to. Stengel has, again, proposed rethinking the First Amendment that guarantees the freedom of speech. And in 2018, he stated, quote, "Having once been almost a First Amendment absolutist, I have really moved my position on it because I just think for practical reasons in society, we have to kind of rethink some of those things." Yeah, so now he's coming to work for Joe Biden. Here he is talking about, this was at a press conference where he was leading a panel on this, and he talked about how he believes propaganda is good and that we basically need to feed people misinformation to drive a certain narrative. Yeah, here he is answering a question from the audience, and then watch as the guy in the audience asks a follow-up question, and he just stops the rest of the show. He's like, that's it. I don't like answering questions anymore. Listen.
So you'll be the last question, but I just want to weigh in on that for 1 second. So there's another word for master narratives. It's called history. Basically, every country creates their own narrative story. And you know, my old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it, and they have to do it to their own population. And I don't necessarily think it's that awful. And this idea of it, of...
Do you hear that? I'm just blown away by how he continues this. Listen.
News cartel. I mean, I was editor of Time in 2012 during that election. And I remember, you know, you're competing against cartels and everybody. I remember being on a panel with the then editor of the New York Times, who said, it's really hard to break through these days. This is the editor of the New York Times saying it's hard to break through. I wanted to jump off the platform. Like, what's it like for the rest of everybody? So, I mean, there are cartels, but cartels don't have hegemony like they used to. The gentleman right there, last question.
Watch him walk away from this question.
In terms of understanding what happened in the world, because what is happening in America is what the United States flipped on the global south and in the third world, which we live with for many, many years, in terms of a master narrative that was and still is propaganda.
He's called him out about propaganda.
You know what? I hate last questions. Don't you? I usually just want to end something before the last question. But at any rate, I want to thank this fantastic panel here today.
I'm not going to answer that. America spreading propaganda. Just not going to answer it. He's telling them, like, look, we have to suffer because you create these narratives. Third world, other countries have to suffer because you create these narratives. I'm not going to answer that question. Thank you, great panel. Just going to wrap things up. Now, welcome him to the Biden administration, chief propagandist. Think you're going to get straight answers? A chief propagandist at the helm? We'll see. Oh, and then when we ask tough questions as the independent media, see if we get laughed at. We get laughed at by the corporate media, by the way. Oh, how could you ask that question? Everyone in the room laughs. Oh, you're going to ask him that kind of a tough question? Oh, God. He won't be invited back to another press conference. The press corps. I love that the press corps at the White House is considered, the press corps. Like, thank God we've got the press corps in the White House. You have to be part of a multi-billion dollar media organization to get a seat in the White House. Do you think my show could get in there? You know, you watch this show, you support independent journalism, covering stories you're not going to hear in the mainstream media. That's why you watch this show. I'm not afraid to go after Team Biden. I'm not afraid to go after Team Trump. And I'll tell you the truth. Would I be able to get an invitation to have a chair in the press pool at the White House? No. You have to be a part of NBC News, MSNBC, Fox News. We have to lie to the American people. That's what he's telling us. We have to spin things to the American people. That's his job. That was his job, and he's going to be doing it again under the Biden administration. Imagine reading those articles that he wrote while he was at Time magazine. We have to lie to the American people. I was the chief propaganda, and I, you know what? It's not bad at all.
Well, and they're going to be bringing up how progressive he's going to be by bringing, female staff in, like the Michelle Flournoy that's going to be possibly head of the Pentagon, who's like, people don't understand that that's not a progressive thing. There's going to be more war, definitely, with somebody like that in there. You know, like they hide it under the auspice of we're being progressive, but they're just right. Filling the cabinet with more warmongers. That's all these people are.
Yeah, not just her. I mean, look, we got Linda Thomas Greenfield. She was a U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. She was appointed leader of the Biden-Harris Senate State Department team. She was a stalwart ally with Susan Rice. She pushed for the war in Libya. make no mistake, just because they're women doesn't mean they don't want to go to war. She pushed for the invasion of Iraq. She was also involved in the decision to remove peacekeepers from the United Nations, which enabled the Rwandan genocide. By the way, the Rwandan genocide, as Bill Clinton pointed out, was the worst, was what he considered his biggest failure as president of the United States. Not only that, so you mentioned one. I mentioned Linda Thomas Greenfield. There's more. I mean, Lisa Sawyer, here's another one that's now going to be a part of the Biden campaign, Biden team. She served as director for NATO and European Strategic Affairs for National Security Council from 2014 to 2015. Worked for Wall Street's J.P. Morgan Chase as foreign policy advisor. Sawyer was part of the Center for a New American Securities Task Force on the Future of Coercive Economic Statecraft. So, Mommy, what do? Well, basically, that means that we use methods of economic warfare to destabilize countries around the world that don't agree with us. Mommy, really? You do that? Yeah, that's my job, honey. How does that work? Well, basically, we send all kinds of disinformation and we destabilize currency around the world so that their people suffer and their economies collapse, and then they will work with us. Oh, Mommy, you're so great. Lisa Sawyer. So she'll be working with Team Biden. Sawyer believes the U.S. government is not doing enough to deter Russian aggression. She wants U.S. troop levels to return to the levels they were at in 2012. She wants offensive weapons shipments to the Ukraine in force, which would be an increase in a violation of the Minsk agreements. So yes, let's make sure that our big defense contractors can just start producing way more weapons and we can send them to the Ukraine and we can destabilize countries that don't agree with us. That'll help people around the world because everyone should agree with us. We're the United States. Everyone should agree with us.
Well, and the thing is, like, it's like so right in your face what their agenda is really going to be, because it's almost like they could not wait to start getting these people in place. They just couldn't get them there fast enough. Yeah.
It's like they had a list. Like they just pull it out of a safe, you know? It's like, all right, go to the neoliberal safe. Do you have the neoliberal safe open? Okay, we have a laundry list. You know, it's like last night I was watching The Crown, the new season of The Crown. Margaret Thatcher, played by Gillian Anderson, formerly of X-Files fame. She's fantastic. She meets with the Queen for the first time. And the Queen says, you know, I'm something of a novice sort of... I can figure out your cabinet pretty well. Like, I'm really good at this. I know who you're going to pick. So she's like, it's fun for me. Let me just pick the, and she, so she pulls out a list, you know, she's like, Secretary of War. Did I get it right? She's like, yeah. She just goes down the list. She like knows all these people because they're the names that are just, they're always around. Let's go back to the list. This weekend I was watching Jen Psaki from the Obama administration. I saw her pop up again. So she's back. She's with the Biden team. All of these people are back. So when I've told you on this show that, you know, don't think you're going to see much of change at all, this is what I'm talking about. This is exactly what I'm talking about. When you have all of these people who are now going to insulate President Biden from any sort of meaningful change. Otherwise, it's going to take him sitting at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office saying, you know what, guys, I know we ran on certain things. And I hear all of you. But what I want to do is I want to affect real change in this country. I don't care if I go down swinging because of it. I'm going to pass universal health care. He's going to have everyone in that office going, no. No, we can't do that. We can't do that. I want to get us out of the Middle East. No, we can't do that. See, look at President Trump. In praise of President Trump, he has tried to get us out of these foreign wars. And he's had enormous pushback. He's had enormous pushback from these career Pentagon, these non-elected career Pentagon people that are basically like, no, I know you want an executive order or with troop withdrawal in the Middle East, but we're not going to do it. Or the way that they do it is they pull back some to make the president happy, and then they move more over. That's what's happening. So this like deep state is real. This like deep militaristic state in this country is real. you know, to his credit, President Trump ran on ending these foreign wars. It's one of the reasons he got elected. But then when he got to town, he was pushed back by the Pentagon. He had these war hawks, these warmongers that wanted to keep going because they know it means the future. You know, they have to pay for these defense contracts. They have to make money off of it.
Well, and this,
you know, a substantial
back,
I mean, this percentage is, of these people worked with Obama.
This is what got Kennedy in big trouble because he was like he went against them. That's what the whole Cuban crisis. He went against them and
yeah.
They were constantly yeah, in his ear, telling him.
When you go against the military-industrial complex, it doesn't end well for you. And that's why you don't win re-election, by the way.
Well, and that was my whole argument to some of my friends. Is like I almost prefer the idea of Trump. I know he's bad, but at least he tweeted. His ego was so big that he tweeted things that he was doing. All of the stuff that Biden's going to do is going to be done in secret, and we're going to have no idea. And it's going to be done under the auspice of progressive, like being progressive. But that's not going to be the case. It's going to be, again, where we know nothing. There's no transparency. We have no idea unless you pay attention to foreign news news cycles that anything's even going on anywhere.
Yeah, because we're not going to learn about it. We know how insulated Biden already is. And by the way, we saw that press conference the other day where he was just like handed a bunch of softball questions, right? Like, oh, Mr. President-elect, thank you for taking my question. I mean, it was like night and day difference between a Trump press conference, right, and a Biden press conference. It was funny to watch. But again, this is a prime example of this, you know, interventionist-minded, establishment-oriented figures that are going to be a part of this campaign, a part of this new team. Like, we need to go into other countries. We need to tell other people what to think. We need to start spreading America all over the place again. We need to keep going into these different countries and starting wars like we did in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. Let's just line them up. Let's just line them up. Get them all in here. So this military-industrial complex, this corporate elite, you know, this continuing of foreign wars, all of these corporate elites that worked at JP Morgan and Wall Street banks. Folks, this is what I say, you know, watch what they do, not what they say. So what Biden has said is he's going to take on a very progressive agenda. He's heard the voices of progressives in this country. Okay, you're not president yet. We'll keep watching. But I'm going to keep reporting on this here on the show because it's incredibly important. This is what I don't want people to do is to go back asleep. Don't fall back asleep. It's happening right before your eyes right now. Team Biden is starting to scare the hell out of me. Let me know your thoughts on this. Drop me a comment below. Smash that like button if you'd be so kind. And subscribe to the channel. There's a little bell notification you can turn on. You can set it for a couple of different options. You can set it so when we go live, you can turn it for that, or you can set it for all. So anytime we publish a new video, you'll get that notification as well. But please turn that on. That way you'll know when we go live. We go live every morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So thank you so much for joining us.
So we had somebody in the comments, DS, say, I bet you won't hear Biden call reporters nasty or other names when they ask him hard questions. No, he just walks away. He just flat out won't answer them. Right. You're still not going to get answers if that's what you're thinking.
He'll say, come on, man.
Yeah. Come on, man.
You know the thing.
He is going to bring back the daily briefing. It'll be interesting to see on the coronavirus thing. We know that. We heard that reporting. It'll be interesting to see if he does that every day. I don't know that. I mean, when you see him, I mean, it's clear. I just think it's clear the mental capacity is not there.
I think they're just going to hide him in the White House basement, to be honest.
I mean, I just think they're going to have to bring other people out, other doctors, do all the talking. He'll probably kick it off a little bit, but I can't imagine him doing this every day. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll surprise us all. But I think it's clear. I mean, from the times that I used to interview him and when you watch videos just from a few years ago, you know, I think people are just, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance right now. I think people are just like, don't want to admit, you know, I don't know. It's going to be, It's going to be a little scary time. I'm worried about it. It scares me because, you know, he's here. He's the president of the United States. He'll just be pushed around and told by these war hawks what to do. You know, and he'll just go along with it. He has never backed away from supporting a foreign war. He's never backed away for increasing defense spending.
That's exactly so, right. There's never been a war Joe Biden didn't like.
Yeah. And if you don't think so, just look at his voting record. All you need to do, it's all public. It's all public.
Well, and there's old videos out there of him, you know, talking about Iraq, talking about everything. And even the things that he's had a chance to backtrack, he's like, I do the same thing. He just doubles down.
Yeah. Like this quote. If the agency teams that he's putting in place are any indication, Biden will be firmly insulated from any pressure to depart from the neoliberal status quo, which the former vice president has pledged to restore. Instead, he's likely to be pushed in the opposite direction, towards an interventionist foreign policy dictated by elite beltway interests and consumed by Cold War fever. And here's Ben Norton. From the gray zone, more of the revolving door between mainstream corporate media outlets and the U.S. government. Three paid analysts on MSNBC have left to join Joe Biden's administration. A fourth paid MSNBC contributor helped write Biden's victory speech. So when we say when you watch these, you know, mainstream media and these, they're all just tied together as one big machine. I mean, it's the same thing at Fox. I mean, how many people left the Fox News channel and went to work for Trump? How many people are leaving MSNBC? Analysts, military analysts, and so forth. It's all one big machine. They go to work for the Biden team. You know, my only hope is that there are some big pieces of legislation that Biden can push through on stimulus, effect some real change with a massive stimulus plan, maybe when he first comes into office in January 20th, perhaps. Wiping away student loan debt upwards of $50,000, which is part of his plan, would be transformative. I published that on TikTok the other day. People just, their minds were blown. Like, oh my God, I could go back to living my life again without that kind of debt around my neck. It would be transformative. Some say I wouldn't have to work two jobs because of that student loan debt. $200 in Social Security benefits increase for people, that would be transformative. So there are some things I hope that because of this crisis, they'll be able to get done that will help the American people in a big, big way. Seems like that's the only time we do anything in this country, you know, so we're faced with something big. But the problem is there's so many profiteers who hang out and waiting. So we have 9/11 and immediately the military industrial complex is like, yes, let's go into Iraq, baby. You have Donald Rumsfeld right there in the White House saying, yeah, but there's no good targets for television in Afghanistan. We got to go into Iraq. And people like looked at him. Condi Rice like looked at him. Was like, they didn't attack us. Just want to go into North Korea too. But we can fabricate that. We can make that up, right? We can draw a connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Yeah, we could do that. Just march Colin Powell out there and hold up little vials of stuff that they think they found that has no connection to anything before Congress. All right, let's go to war.
Hey, Clayton, we have somebody that asked, like, you keep saying neoliberal. Could you explain what neoliberalism is?
I mean, there's so many different ways you could slice this. And I think it's changed over the years. I mean, to look it up, there's like eight different definitions of it. But I think if you take the most recent use of it, most recent derivation of it, it's this sort of moderate liberal, which has an interventionist mindset, thinks that we should be continuing these foreign wars. There's very little difference between conservatives. So neoliberals really are like the warmongering corporate elites, corporate liberals that run the show. That to me is a neoliberal. So what is a neoliberal position? It's continuing fracking. It's continuing these foreign wars to enrich these corporate elites that make money off of them. It's not doing anything meaningful on healthcare. A neoliberal position is something very similar to what, well, it's Biden's position on healthcare, frankly. It's, you know what, we'll do maybe a single payer option, but really we're just going to be subsidizing the insurance industry. So we'll just pay money to the insurance industry. We gotta pay people, right? We just got to keep these lobbyists happy. We got to make sure these pharmaceutical companies are happy. No real change. All of these guys vote for going to war. They vote for huge increases in the defense budgets. They don't really stand for progressive issues. They don't stand they don't stand their ground against stacking the court on the Supreme Court. They have no backbone. But neoliberalism has changed over the past 200 years, like in its meetings. But that's really, I think, the latest way that people are using it, I think, in 2020 parlance. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Where's G-Dog?
It's also hard because people get so, they want to believe so much that one person is going to make all this change. And it sounds like, you know, it sounds like you're just bashing those people and saying that's not going to happen. And it's disappointing. But the thing is, the more educated you are, the more you can, you know, keep your finger on the pulse and push these people to do the things that we need them to do. You know, getting the people that if you pay more attention, you can actually fight to get these people out of these positions of power. But the thing is, when you're listening to the mainstream media narrative, you're going to think these people are doing the right thing. So like it's hard to not be disappointed when you start hearing what's really going on. But that's when you should wake up and start fighting.
No, I think that's a great, great point because it's uncomfortable. So many of you, we've got like 5,000 of you watching right now. Like, I know it's uncomfortable, right? You've been spoon-fed this narrative on major television, major news networks. You've been spoon-fed this stuff. If you've been watching MSNBC, you've been spoon-fed Russiagate for 4 years, right? If you watch CNN, you've been spoon-fed narratives there. If you've been watching Fox, you've been spoon-fed stuff there. And if you wrap yourself in sort of this like blanket, right? And it's just comfortable because you're just used to it. And then someone comes on the air and starts challenging, you know, someone starts saying, this is not how it is. Here's the truth. And then you're like, ooh, that's a little uncomfortable. Let me pull that blanket up a little bit more because I don't want to hear that. My worldview is really, I like Biden. I'm a huge Biden fan. Wait a minute. Clayton's telling me that there's all these warmongers and propagandists who are now going to be a part of his administration. That's uncomfortable. Now you can choose to ignore it and we can all go back to sleep and nothing will change. Or you can choose to pay attention to it. And when we have elections and you have people that are running and have progressive ideas that are saying, I'm not going to be bought and sold by corporations. For instance, we're hoping to have David Kim on the show. He ran for Congress out of California's 34th district in Los Angeles. He took out a personal loan. He was an immigration attorney to run himself. He ran against an incumbent Democrat, Jimmy Gomez, who raised millions of dollars. He lost narrowly, but he ran on a progressive platform. And like, these are the people that we should be able to get behind. Like, here was his platform. These are both Democrats, right? David Kim ran on rent and mortgage income relief, universal basic income, homes guarantee, cancel student loan debt, free public college, abolish ICE and supports full legal status, rejects corporate money, did not take any corporate money when he ran, rejects PAC money, military industrial complex money, rejects big pharma money. Like when you hear a candidate like that, yes. But who won? Big money. Representative Gomez won by a narrow margin. Isn't that amazing? So that's how we can affect change, by candidates who aren't bought and sold by these guys and who have an independent voice for change. We just need more of them. You know, we had a lot of people win this time. We just need more, 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 more. and hopefully we can have a change. Because if we don't, we're in a world of hurt. I mean, this country is going down the tubes fast.
Scott just sent a super chat and said, the fight against that propaganda and false narratives doesn't end here, but it starts with getting some of the message control away from Sinclair. And some people might not know what Sinclair is. It's like one of the biggest media conglomerates.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When you have all of these narratives consolidated under like a few billionaires. So you think when you're watching like your local news stations, there's been a couple of exposés on local television news. Now, I used to work in local television news. And it was fascinating to watch, but a lot of these different groups, whether it's Gannett or Sinclair Broadcasting, they might own your local station in Kansas City, right? But they also own 60 other stations or whatever across the country, right? And now under the FCC laws, they're able to buy up as many as they want. There used to be a limit to the number they could buy. Now they can buy like as many as they want. So now you have all of these like local television stations consolidated by billionaires running one narrative. And it's amazing. There was a story where they featured all of these local news stations saying the exact same thing. They had been given like a script, and all of these local news anchors were, I don't remember exactly what it was. I forget the story, but it was a conservative, you know, Sinclair conservative station group. It was like this narrative that all of these stations had to read on the air. And someone took, it was amazing. It was like a montage. Took all of these news anchors from all over the country, somehow got access to all of these videos and put them on one like Brady Bunch on the screen. So you just had hundreds of these little pictures of these news anchors all in unison, repeating the exact same script.
Well, have you ever propaganda. Seen, you ever seen the Conan O'Brien where he was going to do a wedding on his show? And so if you guys want to see this in action, go to YouTube and search Conan O'Brien pushing the envelope. And you'll see exactly how they just read scripts, like all of them.
I'm going to do it. Here we go. I'm going to pull this up.
You pulling up the Conan O'Brien one?
Yeah.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, our show, of course,
you got echo.
Is this it?
We've made a little bit of news this week. I don't know if you've heard about this, but I'll tell you why. It's because on our last New York show, which is tomorrow night, we're going to...
Did you hear me that you have echo?
Right here.
There you go.
Is it better now?
I'm not talking about a comedy bit. I'm talking about a real, legally binding... same-sex marriage between our show's costume designer, Scott Cronick, and his partner, David Gorshein. Now, is this going to happen? Yeah. There they are. Of course, here's how it happened. Same-sex marriage isn't allowed in California, so Scott and David were going to get married during our week here in New York. And I thought instead of them getting married at City Hall, why not get married right here on the stage of the Beacon and do it right? Now, this will be the first, I believe, same-sex wedding ever performed on late-night television, and we're all very excited about it. Best of all, I am going to officiate the wedding myself. Now, I'm pretty good. I'm using that for everything now, yeah. So anyway, we announced this. News stations around the country have picked up on this story, and each one is putting its own unique spin on it.
Talk show host Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be able to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on his late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the
envelope on late night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope once again on late night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien is looking to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be preparing to push the late night envelope. Yeah.
God bless. We've got to.
God bless our media.
We've got to get an envelope.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Holy crap.
I mean, well, and that's the thing. When you watch a local news channel, right, you're watching a local channel, you think you're getting your news, but you're getting the same narrative that everybody's getting, and it's one that they don't even have control over. They just read a prompter. I mean, they're used to, like, you remember back in the day, like, Ted Koppel and Walter Cronkite, those guys wrote their stories. They did their journal, like they investigated, they did their own journalism and stuff. Those people don't exist anymore. Now all you have are talking heads.
No, and it's sad. I mean, it's like, you know, that's why Will Ferrell playing Ron Burgundy is so funny. You know, he reads, you know, it's like him reading the prompter. He's like, I'm Ron Burgundy? Who put a question mark in the prompter? He'll read it. Like, I'm Ron Burgundy. Like, what are we just, you know, just like puppets? You can't think for yourself. And it's amazing. So yeah, someone from corporate, whatever, like, is, you know, pushing this narrative that this is pushing things too far. This is what's going to happen. And it just comes right from the corporate office, sending this like, conservative narrative. It's incredibly troubling. And none of these other stations, I don't imagine any of these news anchors even knew about it. Of course, they're not in contact with these other stations, you know, and they see themselves show up on this. But this was around that same era where they were just getting all of these news scripts, the same sort of stuff. Every station was regurgitating the same crap over and over again. It must be so nice to be able to sit back as you're like billionaire and you're like, haha, watch my stations go to work for me, you know, watch them. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today on The Big Show. We will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Again, the House of Representatives meeting today to kickstart, hopefully, stimulus negotiations. That's top on their list, along with keeping the government running for the next few months. They have to get that thing signed by December 11th. So we will be watching that very closely. So keep it here. Thank you so much for subscribing to the channel. If you are not a subscriber yet, please do so. Just hit that subscribe button. And thank you for supporting independent journalism, covering the stories that are a little uncomfortable, make you a little uncomfortable, but in the end, make you smarter, I hope. Thank you, guys. Much love to all of you. Thank you, David, in the booth. Where Grover vanished to. What's going on with
I gotta get today? That cricket sound effect.
Yeah, he's temperamental. Thank you, everyone. Until next time, go out there and enjoy a round of golf. Much love to you. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everyone.
I don't wear a toupee.